So I don't really know what to do here because I've basically been trying to do big picture podcasts talking about, well, the Wizards aren't, well, they're wizarding. They're doing wizard stuff. And I don't really know what to do when the Wizards stop doing wizard stuff. But we're going to do a podcast because the Wizards are playing with some fire. They lost last night against the Clippers. It broke a 5-game winning streak. It was the definition of a schedule loss. The second night of a back-to-back after beating the Lakers in overtime the night before. The Clippers are obviously one of the best teams in the league, and they looked like it against the Wizards. And, you know, the Wizards actually trended in the opposite direction in that game from what a team normally will on the second night of a back-to-back. You know, normally if a team is going to play well on the second night of a back-to-back, they, you know, keep it close in the first half and then they look exhausted in the second half. And the Wizards fell down 24 and they actually cut it to 5 by the end of the third quarter, kind of doing the Wizards stuff they normally do, falling down double digits and fighting back. I actually thought, even though they ended up losing by 19 or whatever it was to the Clippers, I thought they played pretty well given the circumstances. They've got Denver on Thursday night, and I have Ben Standing on the Skype line.
This is true. I'm also often not as good on a back to back, but technically we haven't podcasted for a little bit, so I should be well rested in theory.
Well, you should be rejuvenated. This is literally the first time that I've been covering the Wizards. Like my first time since joining the Wizards beat that I've covered a 4-game winning streak, let alone a 5-game winning streak. We're about to talk about good basketball and give some good vibes to people.
We are. I tweeted this last night. I honestly don't think it got the attention it deserved. So, you know, I don't know what to say. But I think last night was the first game since the playoffs in 2018 against Toronto in which anybody watching a Wizards game would be asking the question, wait, are they actually good? Because after they lost to Toronto, it was a disaster for the next, you know, almost 3 seasons or whatever. And even when they're going into like the last games against Portland and the Lakers, nobody went into those games asking the question, are the Wizards actually good? They were just like, okay, well, you know, they're playing a little bit better. Let's see what happens. But when you beat Portland and the Lakers and then you're playing the Clippers, like if they actually had beaten the Clippers, we would have had to reassess completely what we're talking about. And we're even doing that a little bit right now, but that only happens because they just won these games. So I actually thought last night was, I'm not saying that they are good or great or anything, we'll discuss, but like, I think that aspect was interesting. Like to your point of like, you haven't covered a winning streak. That was the first game in forever in which it was like, well, wait a minute, what's going on here?
Yep. No, it was, I don't know. I guess I'll ask you off the bat then. Do you think they're good? Are they good? Do we cover a good team? I can't tell you how many times I've texted to people in the last week, something along the lines of, wait a second, do I cover a super team now? Is that how this works?
I mean, you know, obviously it feels like they're going to kind of go as Russell Westbrook goes on some level. I mean, Bradley Beal, I mean, obviously, you know, all-star starter, leads league in scoring, all that. But, you know, his level of consistency, not just in terms of production, but in terms of just kind of everything that kind of goes that you want out of a main player. I mean, is there pretty much every night. You know, for the people who question his energy at times, go back and look at that Lakers game. I wouldn't say LeBron James was playing full out the whole game, right? But because, you know, you can't over a full season, and this is a crazy year with the pandemic. So I think Bradley Beal is doing more than fine. And you know, some of their deeper role players, you know, they're starting, you know, you're going to have up and downs with the young guys like Hachimura and Devi Avdija and Garrison Matthews. But Russell Westbrook, that was the reason why, you know, we all kind of thought to some degree they had 6 or 7 seed upside, because you're putting together 2 all-NBA level guards all on the same team. And if they play at that level and Bertans is making shots, why can't this team be in that playoff mix on the above the play-in games? But then obviously the year went the way it did, in large part, because Westbrook was not even close to being that guy. And when he's played at a higher level, you know, we've seen them win. They beat the Nets when he played at a high level. He's played better during this winning streak for the most part. So you know, I think it kind of comes and goes with him. And then there's a few other factors. Obviously, it's not just him and Beal. But to me, like, it's ultimately that. So if you tell me we're seeing this sort of all NBA-ish level version of Westbrook, then, yeah, you might be covering a good team. But, you know, I can't also ignore everything that's happened this season and understanding that, you know, there are still questions on multiple fronts to say flat out. But it is a different conversation than we were having probably even the last time I was on the podcast, you know, where it was more about, you know, sort of questioning the team and thinking about the future than it is talking about the present.
Yeah, there was a point, and to your point, I think a lot of this is about Westbrook. There was a point earlier this year where only like 13% of his shots were coming at the rim. That's according to Basketball Reference. And that number's up to 20% right now. I mean, he's getting to the rim so much better. He's finishing there. Actually, a lot of the times he's not finishing there. He's missed a lot of layups during this stretch. But with Westbrook, so much of his production is more how, like, he's going to put up 20, 10, and 10 almost no matter what, or close to it. So much of his production is more how he gets to his 20, 10, and 10 than it is what he ends up with. You know, ultimately, you feel like he's had so many games where he's finished with 20, 10, and 10, and it's been better than 25, his 25, 12, and 12 game. And it's because it just matters to him, like, if for him, how he gets to those. Is he getting to the rim? Our defense is starting to collapse in on him more because he's attacking the rim so much. You know, during the Lakers game, he took 25 shots and 19 were in the paint. That was not a thing that we saw from Westbrook early in the year by any means. You know, the first time we saw that all season was that second Nets game, the 149-146 one where Westbrook hit the game winner. And that was the first time we kind of saw him attacking relentlessly. And he's gone in and out a little bit throughout the year. And the last, you know, however many games, the last few games, it's just been a whole other level. And it's not throwback attacking Westbrook because he's not dunking on guys. He's not always even jumping over guys. And he is missing shots at the rim. But look, I very rarely have a problem with a guy missing a layup. It's like, yeah, he should maybe make some more of them, but that's getting you the line. And ultimately, a guy who is only hitting 58% of his layups is still taking really, I mean, you know, 58% shooting is good. The tough part on the layup is actually being able to get there, and he's getting there well now. And it's not just because he's putting his head down and dribbling. He's actually making a conscious effort to do it. And I asked him about that, and he said that it was just because of his body. He feels better with the quad. He feels healthier. You know, the catch and goes on the weak side have been so huge for him. Bill runs a pick and roll on one side of the court. Westbrook's on the other side. He receives a swing pass, and he is just taking off upon receiving that pass and going straight at the rim. And those are huge, and they kind of create spacing in their own special way that he doesn't do with his shooting. He looks like a – now he's going to have nights where he just doesn't look good. And the defense is a problem. I mean, that's he might be the main defensive culprit. I don't know if he's the main defensive culprit of the season, but he's certainly one of them with the way that he just doesn't really stop the ball, and, you know, his team defense and him just kind of straying off of guys and leaving shooters open. It's been a problem all year. But during this streak, I mean, even with the percentages down, he's been on the nights where I should say the percentages are down, it's like he's been quite good. I mean, he just looks like a different guy than he did at the start of the season.
Yeah, I mean, without question, he looks different. I don't usually do homework for this podcast. I just sort of wing it, and I think you appreciate my recklessness at times. But I tried to look up a couple of things here.
Don't do your homework.
Well, you know, I mean, I tried to. I was just curious about a couple of things, and this isn't anything that earth-shattering by any stretch. I'm not pretending I did a ton, but I was just noticing that during this last six games, Westbrook has made 0 3-pointers. And on the one hand, I might be like, well, that's obviously not good because he has shot some. But on the other hand, he's only taken 10, which means he's, you know, that's just, you know, it's less than two a game. that's actually notable because he's averaging over three a game during the season. And obviously, you know, he's not a good 3-point shooter, and you don't want him, you know, ideally you want him, like you said, attacking the basket. So to whatever degree that's been more of a conscious effort on his part or just the game flow or whatever, yes, 0-for-10, not good. But, you know, I could maybe make the case it's better than him going, you know, 3-for-20 something, you know what I mean? If he's jacking up more. So that's a good, you know, I think on some level that's a good sign. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, I won't say they're only going to go so far as to how well he plays, but he has to play well because he's not one of those guys. Like, if hypothetically Bradley Beal, I guess, but like there are other players who, if they're not 100% or they're off, maybe you can sort of hide them a little bit while they're on the court, try to take advantage of best you can. You can't hide Westbrook because he doesn't want to hide. He's front and center at all times with ball dominance and all that. So if he's not playing well, it's going to drag everything down. And we saw that obviously for a lot of this season. So that's why it is so important that he plays better. You feel it looks better. And, you know, in terms of taking less threes, I mean, that's a good sign, even if 0-for-10 is not good.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you want. You want him limiting those threes. I mean, those are turning into shots at the rim. You know, a lot of the shots that he could justify taking, they could be open catch and shoot threes where he gets the ball on a swing and he can justify to himself taking those shots. And instead, he's getting the ball on the go and he's attacking. He's playing both halves of back-to-backs now, which tells you a little something about where he's at with his health. I mean, I think this is very helpful. I will say the weirdest trend of Russell Westbrook's career is normally as great players get older, the thing that keeps them going is their shooting, right? You know, like we imagine that Stephen Curry is going to age well. Because, you know, at some point, you know, even when he's, you know, too old to run an offense or something, which obviously he's not close to that point, but whenever he gets there, you know, he'll be able to run around screens and just be just a dominant off-ball shooter. Like kind of how just like Dirk was able to be really good into his late 30s because the guy was just 7 feet and could shoot from anywhere. And then there's the other crew of great player who becomes a better shooter. They just add that skill, you know, Jason Kidd adding his shooting skill throughout his career, right? And it is so weird that Westbrook has gone the actual opposite direction. Like I know people who thought for a long time, you know what, at some point Russell Westbrook is going to learn how to shoot. He's going to be able to at least be competent as a shooter. And the reasoning was because a lot of times scouts will look at your free throw percentage and say, if you hit a good number from the line, then you can figure it out. That's one of the reasons why people are so concerned with Denny Avdia's three-point shooting. Even though he's shooting 37 or whatever it is from three this year, he has never had a year where he's hit anything close to an acceptable number from the line. So people wonder how much of a mirage that is and whether he's going to be able to learn how to shoot. That's one of the indicators. And with Westbrook, he was like an 80-something percent free throw shooter for like forever, for like a decade in the NBA. So he was basically over 80% every single year except for 1 year, his first 8 or 9 years in the league. And that 1 year he was below 80, he was at 78%, and it was his second year in the league. And every other year, he's 84, 82, 80, 83, 84, 81, 85. And then 3 years ago, he shoots 74%. 2 years ago, he shoots 66. Last year, he's at 76. And this year, he's down to 60. And I remember when that trend started, I was covering the Thunder that season when the trend started. He shoots 74%. And early in the season, it was even worse. And he kind of hinted at early in that year, that was the year where the NBA started to really enforce delay of game. And as part of their enforcing delay of game, they said that technically free throw shooters were not allowed to walk beyond the half court line or else they would be called for a delay of game between free throws. They couldn't walk between that beyond the half court line. And that was part of Westbrook's free throw routine. He used to walk to half court and back, and he couldn't do that anymore because it would be called for a delay of game. So he had to change his free throw routine. And Russell is an incredible creature of habit. And at the time, that was kind of the reason we all attributed to, oh, you know what, this could be it. And he hinted at it one time. It was the only time I've ever heard of him or heard him saying anything along those lines, hinting at that being a reason for the free throw shooting. That being said, like, that couldn't be the reason for this kind of fall off 4 years later. It's just incredible to see such a fall off shooting free throws from a guy who was like a really good free throw shooter. It's very weird. It's just weird. I don't know what to make of it. I really don't. I just know it's just weird.
You know, and one of the, again, as I'm looking up some of the stats here during these last six games, like one of the reasons why Washington has been successful has been they've been really good at the free throw line. Here are the percentages of guys who've taken at least 13 attempts in that stretch. Neto, 92.3. Robin Lopez, 79.2. Mo Wagner, 73.3. Bertans, 93. Hachimura, 88. Beal, 88.4. I mean, that's all really good. And then Russell Westbrook, 16 of 34, 47.1%. He is definitely a massive problem there for sure, on top of the 0 for 10 from 3-point line. And you're right, it is weird. I mean, it's one of the, you know, obviously, you know, when you look at like prospects, you're always like, well, you know, can they shoot? I mean, you mentioned the free throw concerns and whether a guy can shoot. That was the thing with Jan Vesely that raised red flags right off the bat. But in a lot of cases, especially with truly perimeter players, like you mentioned Jason Kidd or Magic Johnson or some others, you know, history shows that you can figure out how to shoot. It is literally a repetition thing in most cases. And it is so odd, like you said, that it has gone the other way for this guy. You know, I mean, we see in baseball over the years, you know, the Chuck Knoblauch situations where guys, you know, can't make simple plays that they were able to do, you know, the Ricky and Keels or whatever. But that, I mean, that doesn't seem like that's what we're talking about here. So it is super weird to see it. But yeah, I mean, look, I guess, did you answer the question, by the way, if they're actually good, or did you just make me answer that?
I just made you answer it.
Well, yeah, let's go. What do you got?
So here's my working theory. Here's my working theory. They're 11-18 on the year. I think the like first four games after COVID kind of don't count. They were still missing guys. Guys were out of shape. They get right. Killed by those four games. Like those are not a proper representation of the type of team they are, you know?
Right.
So I think those kind of don't count. If you take those four out, which you can't do for the season, but you can do when you're trying to figure out what kind of team they are, because they're not a good representation of what kind of team they are. They're 11-15. 11-15, 11-14. I think they're probably something like that kind of team. Like a hovering around 500 team that's capable of playing well, but isn't going to do it consistently because it depends on whether you're getting this Westbrook we've seen for the last five or six games. And remember, as part of the stretch, he still had games where he just is not shooting a high enough percentage to keep the offense up. And that's going to hurt you when you're playing really good teams eventually. You know, you're going to have games where Westbrook looks like he did against, say, the Lakers, where even in the first half when he's missing shots, it's like he took 13 shots in the first half, but 11 of them were in the paint. It's like, that's fine. I really don't have, like, those are good shots. They're going to go in eventually. And he finishes 13 for 25 and has 30 some odd points. It's like, okay, that was trending in that direction. That's a great Westbrook game. He was really good in that game. It's excellent in the second half. You're going to get some of those, and because he's 32 years old, you're probably not going to get exclusively those. You know, the defense, I still wonder about. I know there's this whole the defense is back sort of thing. I don't know. I think I think we should learn from last year about overanalyzing 10 game samples in the middle of a season during a stretch where they're predominantly playing subpar offenses. I mean, last year after the trade deadline, they were 14th in defensive efficiency, but they also had a pretty easy schedule, and post-trade deadline stats tend to be really wonky for teams that are losing teams, and the bubble added just weird circumstances to everything. And they went into this year thinking, okay, you know what, if this is a middle of the pack defense, then they're good to go. And they weren't, they were just, you know, bottom five right off the bat. And maybe they're not bottom five, but I still don't see them as middle of the pack because I don't see the personnel to get them there. Ultimately.
Right.
So I think they're somewhere in that, like, you know, I thought they'd be around 500 this year coming into the year. And I think they're probably somewhere there or a little bit below there. That might be enough to make the play-in. Like, they have how many games left this year? They're what, 29 games into the season, right? Mm-hmm. So they have 43 games left. Like
that's an insane amount of games. I mean, it feels like we've already witnessed 8,000 games, yeah, considering how this year has gone.
I know. So like they could go, if they go 20-23 or 21-22, they could finish 10th in the East.
I mean,
like, it's not like they need to go on some crazy run to get into the play-in tournament.
Right. Also, good is relative. So there's two ways of looking at what does good mean, because I just lived this with the football team. Good is, are you good with your perception of what that term means, or are you good relative to everybody else around you? The Washington football team finished 7-9 last year. I don't know if anybody thought they were good, but that was good enough to win the division and make the playoffs, and therefore the perception was that they were a little bit better than they probably were. Plus, they did win 5 of their last 7 games, so they were on a good run. There were some caveats within that, but regardless, that happened. In this case, I mean, insane as it is, they're only 4 games out of the 4 seed. Now, there are 9 teams or 8 teams, whatever it is, in between. So you can't just simply say, well, that they're 4 games behind Indiana, 4.5 behind Indiana, or no, 4. But, I mean, they're not that far away. And I think if you look at the East and you think, like, okay, in a first-round series or, you know, in a playoff series, I know it doesn't work this way, I'm not going to say exactly, but, like, who do they have a chance to beat? Okay, forget Philadelphia, forget Brooklyn, forget Milwaukee. I think we could probably all agree on that. Indiana is the 4 seed. Like, I would give Indiana the benefit of the doubt, but at the same point, Bradley Beal would be the best player in that series if that were to actually happen, right? But Indiana's been, you know, more depth, been there, done that, whatever. Toronto is the 5 seed. They're starting to play better. Obviously, historically, they've been better the last couple of years. But, you know, this isn't the title team with Kawhi. Boston's obviously underachieved significantly, but I would think most people would project Washington would lose a Boston series. Miami is further down the list. They're a 10 seed, but now they're starting to get hot. They've won 7 of 10. Obviously, everybody would pick them to win. But, like, I guess my point is that, like, they are good relative to – there's only 3 teams in the league where you can kind of say definitively they're not as good as those teams. And, again, I wouldn't say that they are as good as some of the other ones I just mentioned, but everybody in the East is struggling. So the definition of good isn't just in isolation. It is also relative to the league. And if this version we've seen the last week or so with Westbrook playing better, you know, their defense being a little bit better, is something that they can sustain. And I'm with you. I'm not sitting here saying that defense will be sustainable for all kinds of reasons. And I'm not going to overlook all the other, everything that's happened prior to the last 6 games. But, like, it's not like the rest of the league isn't the East isn't catchable. They are. I mean, the Knicks, Chicago, Cleveland. Remember Cleveland was like this team that was on the rise? They've lost 10 in a row or something like that, or 9 in a row or whatever it is. So and they're now below Washington. So I think, like I said, good is relative to where you are with the East. And I think they're good enough to even be able to forget playing them. Well, I guess playing the 7-10, right? So I guess they're good enough, yes, to get into that range. But, yeah, the East is just largely bad. So they can contend with most of these teams except for probably the top, you know, 5 or so. And then it's just a matter of can they be consistent enough to actually do anything.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
The starting lineup is good. I mean, I think Scott Brooks found something with that first unit. So they are now the new starters, the Westbrook, Beal, Matthews, Hachimura, Wagner starting lineup has now played more than any other lineup for them. And they are plus 2.8 per 100 possessions. And that's not like unbelievable. But one of the big things for them was they were just getting destroyed to start games. And what's kind of weird is they are, but it's now, but it's not because of the starting lineup. They're falling down big early in games, but it's not because of the starters. They're winning the starters minutes. And winning the starters minutes, shockingly, it's a very simple point, but winning with your starters is a pretty important element to winning the damn game. And that unit is playing well together. If you delve into the numbers on like, okay, the Wizards play well when so-and-so is on the court, the two guys who constantly come up, it's not Beal, it's not Westbrook. Actually, Westbrook's on-offs are really, really bad. It's Garrison Matthews, and it's Mo Wagner. And those are the guys. When those guys are in lineups, those lineups are doing well. And the starting lineup was not doing great, and they insert Matthews and they insert Wagner. And I think those guys have played well. I think you'd like to see Matthews get some more shots, to be honest. And that's not just because of me pounding the Garrison Matthews drum. It's just like if he's going to play 20 minutes a game and he's only going to get four shots, like that's not enough to really turn him into a consequential floor spacer. You'd like to see him get, you know, 4 or 5 threes or something like that. It's not a huge thing, but I think that would help them if he were able to get some more shots from a spacing perspective. And if he's able, then you can identify if he's hot that night or whatever too, because he's clearly capable of getting hot and hitting 4 threes in a game. And that obviously opens up your offense, especially if that sort of production comes on the same night that Bertans is hot too, because if you have those two guys on the floor together with the two guards, then, and both those guys are shooting the lights out, then it's like, that's a hard offense to guard. And the thing is, they need 3-point shooting. I would ask you this as a trivia question, but I already did. The Wizards have two guys this year who have 3-point percentages in their rotation right now, who have 3-point percentages above league average. And Bertans is like a fraction of a percentage point above league average. It's him and Matthews, and that's it. And they need the shooting. I mean, they're way, 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 I don't know where they are, but they're way down near, maybe at the bottom. They might be dead last in 3-point percentage. That's possible. If they're not dead last, they're bottom five. They've been bottom five there, and they need the shooting. And even during this winning streak, they haven't necessarily done it with 3-point shooting. They've been good at getting the line. That's great, and they've been defending a lot better. But they could use some extra 3-point production, because like that Clippers game last night, it was like they shoot a really good percentage, but they're not getting up the shots. On other nights, they're getting up the shots, but the accuracy isn't there. And I think playing Matthews has been really helpful. I think playing Wagner has been really helpful. Those guys are energetic. I think they're helping with the defense, especially Matthews, who's been really, really active. I think
he Denny plays Abia with energy.
What do you say? Yeah, he plays with
plays with energy. Same with Mo Wagner. I mean, regardless of whether they're good, you know, I mean, they play with energy. And I always think when you have the star players, you know, like a Beal and a Westbrook, the other guys maybe at least like the last one or two need to be specific, do specific things, and doing the dirty work, so to speak, is that's clearly Mo Wagner's role. And yeah, you got to have a shooter out on the court. You know, Matthews or Bertans pretty much, I think, have to be one of them has to be on the court at all times. And Matthews, it's not just he can make a shot. He plays with, you know, some, I don't know if it's cockiness or just
it's whatever, cockiness.
But
it's cockiness. Plays, it's blatantly cockiness. The dude barrels into anything that's in front of him.
Right. I mean, yeah. And he plays. Yeah. And you can feel that. I think that we talked about this earlier in the year, you know, why it made sense if, you know, while maybe it's questionable to have Troy Brown sitting out because of the first round pick status, the reason why I could imagine Brooks going for a Matthews over Brown is for sort of the body language almost. Brown's more passive. Matthews is more cocky. So, yeah, I think that kind of works.
Yeah, I forget who said it. Might have been Drew Gooden. I don't remember who said it, but it was well said. Somebody said Garrison Matthews defends like a football player. It's like, yeah, that's what he does. He seeks out contact. He seeks out physicality. He fights through and even into screens. He took out Facu Campazzo on that three like a week ago where he legit just clotheslined the guy. Drew Gooden called it a good foul. I'm going to disagree with Drew. He just clotheslined. Richard Jefferson the next day said that wasn't a closeout. It was a clothesline. And it was. He defends like a football player. But for the most part, that's been a good thing for them. They need the physicality. They need the extra effort plays. And they need guys who are going to see a screen and be like, I don't care that you're in my way. I'm finding a way around it. Because they are really struggling. They struggle on screen defense. And having a guy who does that is very helpful. And he's been good.
Again, small sample size. But, you know, since I did look up some stuff here, I'm going to use it to show like I at least tried. So during this six games, the lineup they use the most is the one we mentioned with Matthews and Wagner with Westbrook, Beal, and Hachimura. It's a net rating of plus 5.6. You know,
that's
solid.
Good.
Whatever.
That's a very good number. Yeah.
When you keep the same four but swap out Matthews for Bertans, it's only 17 minutes, so even smaller sample size. Minus 36.4 defensive net rating of 131.7. So again, you know, 17 minutes is not much. You could just have had five crappy minutes, and you know, it completely skews the whole thing. But as a sort of interesting, you know, one guy is a two-way player, and the other guy you just paid $80 million, and everything else is the same, and the number is significantly different. And you have to imagine it's the, like you said, it's sort of the work on both ends of the court, not just the shooting.
Yeah, Bertans has been very all or nothing this year, too. You know, it's just it's very weird to watch him because, like, he's honest. Chase Hughes tweeted out last night that the stretch he's in right now is the longest streak of his career where he's made 2+3s in a game. I forget what the number is. He's made 2+3s in some amount of games. It's the longest streak of his career. And it sure doesn't feel that way. I mean, he's had some huge games. He had the 14 out of 17 stretch in back-to-back games where he was 5-for-6 one night and then 9-for-11 the other night. But it sure doesn't feel like he's hitting those 2-3s every single night, you know? And part of that is because, for the most part, he gets up, you know, 7-10 every night. And when you shoot 2-for-7 or 2-for-9, it doesn't feel all that remarkable. But I don't know. That stat from Chase kind of blew my mind. Because I was like, no way is that what's happening here. It just doesn't feel like that, you know, aside from those two games where he was really hot and the Phoenix game, you know, the Clippers game, it wasn't even that he didn't shoot well. The Clippers threw everything at him and they were having Kawhi guard him and they just were trying to make sure he didn't get shots at all. And it worked. He only took four threes and, you know, the Wizards just weren't able to get him his shots. But for the most part, right? Like it just, I don't know. Does that set, is that set as crazy as I think it is? I thought that was a great find by Chase. I couldn't believe it.
That is interesting. I mean, you know, during this whole pandemic, I've tried to be a little more, you know, introspective on various fronts. And one aspect is sort of the idea of, you know, what is your perception of life? If you view things negatively, the world around you suddenly becomes negative, and to some degree it flips the other way. The perception of Bertans last year was, I'm not saying he was an afterthought, but like, you know, they got a guy who was going to be some sort of a role player for them. They didn't, it didn't cost them anything. He wasn't making any big money, and he came in and made it, had, because he had games where he made a bunch of threes, and then you know, it was a feel good story all the way around. Like, oh, this guy's making shots, even on the games maybe he was off. We didn't have major expectations. Then he has the year he has. Then he signs an $80 million contract, and even if he's not having the same year because of the, with he was, you know, out of shape and the pandemic and all that, but you know, now his misses feel more noticeable because of the fact that we have higher expectations. So that, yeah, I would agree with you, that stat would sort of floor me because it doesn't feel like he's having a good year or anything remotely consistent, but that's a lot of it, I suspect, on some level because we view him differently than we did a year ago.
It's a hell of a lesson in perception right now. You're getting deep.
Was that reasonable, or I don't know?
No, that was very. I mean, he is missing more than last year, but you're right. It is a lesson in perception. I mean, he's shooting 37%, and a lot of those have come in like some big games, which have propped it up. And I bet you, if you take away three of those games, he's shooting 33. But you are right about the perception of it. That said, the perception is justified. When you and it's not just about like, oh, you're getting paid the money. It's about that. It's about the role. It's about the team relies on that guy for that role. And if he doesn't do it on a night in, night out basis, the team suffers. The offense looks totally different. I mean, for all the Wizards don't have the Wizards have this thing that they say after games, and I get why they say it. They're not wrong in saying it. But players, you know, Brooks, everyone says it. It's like, scoring's not our problem. It's the defense. You shore up the defense and you're there. It's like, you're not wrong in saying that. That is the correct thing to say. I get why you say it. But like, when you break it down to granular levels, scoring's been a little bit of a problem. Like, they're a bottom 10 offense. And part of it is that they need the extra shooting and they rely on Bertans so much for top of the line, elite, top five, top seven shooting performances on a consistent basis. And it's not that he hasn't been able to shoot well or shoot decently. It's that he hasn't been able to shoot top of the line because that's what they rely on from his role, you know, being absolutely top notch elite. And he's had games where that's obviously happened. He goes 9-for-11 against Portland, goes for a career high 35 points. Clearly, that happened against Portland. And when he has stretches where he hits two or three in a three-minute span, then it changes the offense. Like, defenses guard him differently, and the offense operates differently, and there's so much more space, and not just more space, but there's miscommunications on defense because they're worried about Bertans. It just completely changes the dynamic of what's happening on the floor. And so I get on nights where I see sometimes people criticize Brooks for playing him even on nights when he's not making his shots, giving him 25 plus minutes. And I actually agree with Brooks. I think he's doing the right things on those nights because ultimately I don't believe that Bertans is the kind of guy who, just because he's 0-for-5, he can't see the ball go through the net one time and then hit a couple. I mean, we saw that in, what was that? Oh, the Portland game, right? It was the Portland game. where he starts 0 for whatever, and then he finishes the game 2 for 8 because he hit a couple big threes late in the game, right? And, like, that's why you leave him in, because it changes the offense when he's able to do that. And I don't believe that starting 0 for 4 means that he's not going to hit 3 out of 4 at some point in the third quarter. And you're just kind of waiting for that moment. Once that moment happens where he scores 9 points in 4 minutes, then you got something. Then that's what you're paying him for. So I get why you leave him in and you try to find those, because that's how you reach your ceiling. That's how you reach the best version of yourself. It's with Bertans. It's just not coming as consistently as, you know, the Wizards would hope.
And yeah, no, for sure.
But he's had a couple of those huge games came in the winning streak, though. Yeah, we'll say that.
Yes. To your point about the offense sort of, you know, not being completely consistent, the lineup that they've used the second most over this stretch, 44 minutes, has an offensive net rating of 91.9. And what that lineup doesn't have is Bradley Beal's not in it. It's Westbrook and Bertans, along with Lopez, Neto, and Denny. And, you know, Lopez and Neto, that's not going to, they're never going to be your go-to offensive players. And Denny's still, you know, learning along the way. This is where you're paying Westbrook and Bertans to carry the load. And as we've discussed, you know, Westbrook's been up and down, and Bertans, like we just said, you know, to some degree as well. So, you know, that, like, on some level, it's, you know, Beal can't play 48 minutes, and, you know, he can't play 40 minutes, you know, with his hair on fire at both ends of the court. He needs, you know, to get the most out of him, you got to have somebody else step up, and those are the two guys. So, you know, imagine what, you know, they could be doing if those guys start getting, you know, a bit more consistent, for sure.
No question. Anything else? Anything on your mind? Anything on your mind you want to get off your chest here? Wizards-wise? Non-Wizards-wise? Or non-Wizards-wise? We talk about it on the podcast. We can talk things out, Ben.
I don't think the world is prepared for what's going on in my head right now. No, I mean, I don't look. I mean, it was more enjoyable to watch the Wizards over the last few games, and you know, these late starts are always a bit of a disaster. I mean, not you and I are, you know, night owls on some level, but like you know, the late nights are interesting. But like, you know, it'll be interesting to see whether anything here is remotely sustainable going forward. I mean, again, the Clippers, ultimately the end, you know, we'll look back at that one day, you know, later and say, oh, well, they had a game where they got blown out. You know, we'll add it up to how many games they've lost by X amount of points, and that will be a game that goes into the mix. But, you know, by and large, you know, getting it down to, what, 5 points, you know, into the second half when they were getting smoked earlier, I think was a positive sign, all things considered. And, you know, on the flip side, part of this whole deal, we know how this works in sports. These other teams are looking past the Wizards. They're thinking, we don't have to sort of go all out. Even if, you know, you know, if you're a fan, if you're listening to this and saying you should play hard all the time, you know, come on, be realistic. When you're at your job every single day of your life, are you killing it? I doubt it. No offense. Maybe you are, but I doubt it. So they're human too. And you know, they're not going to every minute of every game go hardcore, and especially not against a team like the Wizards that you look at and think, oh, okay, got it. You know, we think we got this one. So can they sustain their own play and then simultaneously do it when teams are starting to look at you in a very different way? Especially, you know, you can't ignore Russell Westbrook. You know, if he's playing the way he plays, you know, high energy, both ends of the court, up and down, you've got to be prepared for that. And so we'll see if they can do that. I mean, Rui Hachimura has played better lately. You know, I still like, you know, Denny. It's, you know, a little up and down is to be expected, but the positives are there. He hit that huge three the other day. You defended well in that Lakers game. So, I mean, there's positives. I mean, Neto has been good all year. I think, you know, I almost wonder if Scott Brooks wishes on some level he could have just played Neto from the start over Ish Smith. But obviously with Ish now out, he can do that without having any issue. So, you know, it's an interesting group. They were more fun to watch, which for those of us who kind of have to watch, thank God. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, Rui's been good. Rui's been good. I think some of the stuff about him becoming a top-notch defender has been overblown. He still misreads stuff off the ball, but he is becoming a better on-ball defender. He's just becoming feistier, is what it is. You know, Rui kind of, he's not a feisty person, you know? He's this kind of quiet, reserved guy. And I think sometimes when you watch somebody play basketball, their person, you know, every once in a while you get a guy whose on-court personality is just very different from his off-court personality. And that's fine. That's not saying who you are on the court is who you are as a person. That's obviously not true. But there are some people who you watch play on the court. You see their personality in the court. Basketball is just a personality-filled sport, you know? And you see their personality in the court, and it's just the same as who they are as a person. And I think it's easier to judge that in basketball than it is in something like baseball, which isn't a game that allows players to show as much personality while playing it, you know? And with Rui, I think his real-life personality comes through on the court a little bit, where he's this quiet, reserved guy. You know, he's not at all an aggressive person. He's just like super, super laid back all the time, right? And I think sometimes that comes through. And I think his defense was, amongst other things, it was always missing a little bit of feistiness. I think he's been a little feistier. And I don't know if it's because of Westbrook. It might be. I mean, he says it is. So who am I to doubt that Westbrook is talking to him? I think Westbrook is pumping him up all the time. Like, I don't know. I think Westbrook is behind the scenes going at him all the time to be a little more like Westbrook and a little less like Rui. That's a good thing, by the way. It's showing a little bit. You know, he's guarding LeBron, and he's like waving a hand in his face while he's guarding LeBron. That wasn't a Rui thing. That wasn't a Rui move. He wasn't face guarding guys. He wasn't being kind of a pest. He was never really a pest like that. I mean, that's a cool development. You know, you can look at the numbers from this year to last year, and every single one of them with Rui, it's actually freaky. They're exactly the same. The conventional counting stats, the advanced numbers, anything. Every single stat of Rui's is like exactly the same as it was a year ago. There are little nuanced things, though, just kind of like his feistiness off the ball. You know, Brooks has talked about how he's been better closing out on shooters, which I agree with, even though he's not perfect on it yet. Those little developments, those are cool to see. And they're not giant leaps, but they're important ones. And I think that's come through in these last six games. And I think two numbers that are important, which actually have been a little bit different, is that the three-point rate is up from last year, and the free throw rate is up about 50% from where it was at last year. He had like a 25% free throw rate last year, and now he's hovering somewhere around the high 30s, which is actually a good number. So I think he's better than he was last year. I don't think he's this demonstrably, you know, most improved candidate or anything like that, but I think he's better, and I think we're seeing it in the little ticks in his game are just getting a little bit better. I think these last six games have been encouraging for him because he's never really been a dirty work guy, and he's doing a little more dirty work, and I think that's cool to see.
Yeah, I agree. I still question his instincts, sort of his basketball instincts, but I think, yeah, take the strides for what they are, and we saw some for sure, without a doubt.
All right. Well, I asked you if you wanted to talk about anything. You said no, and then I just started talking about Rui. So you can go to, I guess they're releasing the schedule. By the time this podcast is up, the second half schedule might be up. So who cares about analyzing the schedule? I don't know. The Wizards are playing a lot of good teams. They'll win some, they'll lose some. There's your schedule analysis before it even goes up. I don't even know it, but that's what it is. And you know what?
Hashtag analysis.
I stand by it. Go to The Athletic DC, by the way. I have a story up there this morning about Alex Len and kind of why he chose the Wizards. I know it's incredible timing running a story about Alex Len the day after he gets a DMP. But you know what? Far be it from me to try to predict this center rotation in which a different center leads the team in minutes every night. So I'm just throwing up the story. And yeah, you know, Len had went to Maryland and was really, really close with Ryan Richmond and David Adkins, both of whom were at Maryland when Len was there and are now with the Wizards. And the three of them just kind of always talked about how funny, how cool would it be if we had an NBA reunion. And Len says the reason that he chose the Wizards is because he wanted to play for those two guys in the NBA. And that was the reason that he wanted to go there. And he says he had interest from Brooklyn and interest from Milwaukee and ultimately chose the Wizards. And I kind of just wrote about the relationship between those three guys because they are so close. And, you know, Len had, I thought, some really funny quotes about a couple of them. So check that out over at The Athletic DC. It's a nice story. It's a nice, it's nice to have good vibes from Wizards land. You know, this is my work environment. Covering a team that always loses, the vibes get tiring a little while. It's nice to be having some good vibes. I think the Len story has some good vibes. If you're not a subscriber to The Athletic DC, you can become one. And just become a subscriber to The Athletic altogether if you go to theathletic.com/wizardsafterdark and you can sign up for The Athletic for $3.99 a month. And it's a great offer because you get to read every single Ben Standick story. And what is better than that? You get to read every single one of them and you get to read everything else on the site too. And that gets you your football coverage, your basketball coverage, your baseball coverage, your hockey coverage, everything that you want, everything sports coverage, all of our beat writers, all of our national reporters, everything. You get that if you sign up here at theathletic.com/wizardsafterdark for $3.99 a month, and you can check out that Alex Len story while you're at it. Subscribe to Wizards After Dark. Tell your friends about Wizards After Dark. Leave reviews about Wizards After Dark. Give us 5 stars on iTunes or wherever else is asking you to give us stars, and leave a review on iTunes. That always helps a little bit too. I will be back with another episode. You know, we did like a 1 week hiatus between episodes this week because of the late start times and all the back to backs and all that. Not sure when I'll be back with another episode. It might be later this week. It might be next week. I'm not sure, but whenever it is, I'll talk to you guys then.